Good evening. I'm Karen Ashby, your moderator for tonight's telephone town hall. I welcome you to this live event and would like to thank everybody for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Art Haywood of the 4th Senate District will take your calls as he discusses Dignity Month and Dignity Speech. Senator Haywood will be joined by Karen Armstrong from Penn State University. As a reminder, if you have a question and would like to join the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to join the call and ask a question. So without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you, Karen, and good evening, everyone. This is Art Haywood, State Senator, and welcome to this telephone town hall for my friends and neighbors. I'd like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedules to participate on this call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I really appreciate your engagement. Now, if you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, please press star 3 on your phone. Now, as Karen said, this is Dignity Month, October of every year. This is where people around the world celebrate our inherent worth, our dignity. We began celebrating Dignity Month last year with a number of conversations. This year, October 1st, we are starting off our Dignity Month conversation with Karen Armstrong from Penn State, who has worked nationally and internationally to promote dignity in many ways, one of which is looking at how we talk to each other, person to person, to promote dignity in our speech to each other. So, I would like to turn it over to Karen, and please share something about yourself and get us started in this conversation.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here, Senator Haywood. This is my favorite topic. So, as you shared, I'm a director at Penn State University. Just a little bit about me. I've been researching dignity for years. So the information I share with you is evidence-based, which I think is pretty cool. It helps you know, oh, these things can really change our lives, putting it really basically. I love that you mentioned dignity and language. We're going to be talking a bit about that. So I can tell you, in my dignity walk, in my dignity research, I got involved in this, and that I noticed there would be tension between people. And how do we address it? How do we resolve that? I have a background in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and have heard lots of challenges just based on my profession. And so I'm going to give you some information that might help you look these things up too. But one of the things that I've been really fortunate to do is to work with your office, Senator Haywood, around the topic of dignity. And just giving your listeners a little bit of background information, the dignity model was started by Dr. Donna Hicks out of Harvard University. Her close friend, Desmond Tutu, worked with her to travel the globe and end terrorism, end wars, end acts of violence. And what they got from that was that the violence begins when people feel like their inherent worth isn't valued. I don't know about you, but I know when I feel like people don't really see me, don't really hear me, don't really get me, don't value me as a person, that it hurts. And that's what they found. And the more that it hurts over time, it starts to get into violence. And so one of those things that they developed, Donna Hicks and Desmond Tutu, was the dignity model. And within the dignity model, it talks about different points that help us know when we've got dignity and when it's resonating with us. And so as I was preparing for this, I was really doing a deep dive into a lot of the work in your office, Senator, and noticed that there's something right in the forefront that you do to demonstrate dignity, and that's your work around food security. And the reason that that so resonates with dignity is that one of the components of dignity is safety. And when we don't have safety, we don't know where our food is coming from, we don't know if we're going to have enough for something, whether it is physical safety that we're worried about, will I have enough to eat, I'm really hungry, or psychological safety, I have enough today, but will I have enough tomorrow? Will my kids be hungry again later? What am I going to do? Or will my parents be hungry again later and they don't have enough? That impacts our own self-worth. And so that kind of speaks to some of those reasons why, in my perspective, you, Senator, work so closely around dignity and apply it in real, tangible terms and ways. That's one of those really clear examples. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with the dignity model, just giving you a little bit of information about it, there are 10 elements altogether and then 10 violations. I just named safety as one. Another one is fairness. When we talk about fairness, you think about whether it's in your workplace, within your families and relationships you have, whether it's with the government. If you feel like there are rules and things applied that aren't fair, that impacts your dignity. That's why people get so passionate about certain topics, because that fairness can really, really hurt. And so some of my close friends now at the Dignity Index developed this model to help us understand from a language perspective, how do we demonstrate inclusion, identity acceptance, acknowledgement of other people's pain when we hurt them, acknowledging, yes, I see that hurt, whether it's from us or somebody else, independence, your ability to make your own choices in your own life, all of these other components that really make a huge difference. And so as I talk to you, I want you to think about some of those things I just named, understanding one another, the benefit of the doubt, and then, of course, accountability. What does it mean to be accountable for those things? It's enough to acknowledge, that's a good thing, acknowledge when we've done wrong, but it's also really, really important to be accountable for those things that you do that hurt others. So the folks at the Dignity Index developed this way of gauging language, which is some of what the senator was talking about before, to really help us identify when the things we're saying represent dignity and when they don't. And so I can tell you, you can find the Dignity Index just by Googling. Go to your favorite website. They've got free resources, which is really cool. You can do the same for the Dignity Model. If you just Google it under Donna Hicks, you'll find some great free resources, which I think are really meaningful. But just as we do that, I'm going to talk to you a bit about the Dignity Index. So this is a tool that was made to help journalists and politicians, especially during debates, to evaluate, are the things that are being said truly representing dignity? And so I'm going to do a countdown. There are 8 points to the Dignity Index. I'm going to start with 8. 8 is treating one another in the best possible way, refusing to hate at any moment, at every time, no matter what in your life. 8 is nearly impossible. That you never, ever, 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 ever have that anger in you, right? That's like, how could this happen to me? I feel like my own worth is violated. That's where most people aren't. You might have like a Desmond Tutu and a Mother Teresa. Most of us aren't at an 8. So if you're feeling like that's not me, it's okay. Know that that really is okay. There's then a level 7. And a level 7 is wanting to be fully engaged with the other side, with those who have opposing views, and think differently. Think about your deepest disagreement and what that means to say, I know we have totally opposite views, and I want to work with you. I can tell you that Senator Haywood, I've seen it. I've seen him do this over and over and over and over again, where he's saying, I know we think differently, and we are going to come together, and I'm going to hear you out. So that's a difficult thing to do, especially when others may be insulting you, or the values are so different. It is not an easy scale to reach. The next number is a 6. And a 6 is a welcome that we're supposed to find common ground. now we're getting into the area where most of us kind of live, right? That it's a good thing to be able to talk to our neighbors, to people with opposing views, and to find some commonality. That's a good thing. I know I'm supposed to do that. We're getting to a 5, which is also between a 4 and a 6 is where most people are. If you're the 5, you're going to respectfully listen to somebody else's viewpoint, their goals, and their plans. You might not agree. You might not be seeking common ground, but you're still going to listen. You're going to choose to kind of hear their perspective. As we work our way to a 4, you're going to see some difference here. A level 4 will mock and attack the opposing side. So, really, that's what you believe? You're so dumb. I can't believe you think like that. And we might talk like that with our family, with our friends, with others who share our views, but it's where you're starting to see that anger, that contempt come up, right? When you start to feel, I like to explain contempt where you might get really angry with someone and you feel that inside your chest, right? Like, wow, this really hurts me and I've got to suppress my feelings. We're getting to a 4. If you'll notice, the closer we get to 1, the more angry, the more upset that we become. It is watching for language like mocking people and attacking their background, their belief, their commitment, how competent they are. Have you ever heard that at work, right? Where people are saying something about another person, they're not capable and making fun of them, right? And another person's performance. Oh, they just can't do well. They could never do that kind of thing. That's at a 4, and we're increasing that volatility. When we look and we get to a 3, we start talking about another person's moral character. You are a bad person. It's not just their capabilities and it's not just their competence, but it's thinking there are good people. Most of us think the good people are on our side and we are one of those good people, and they are bad people. It is also us and them language. Our side and their side. This is what I believe. We are the good ones. They are the evil ones. They are the bad ones. So that us and them language comes in at a number 3. When we get to a number 2, it accuses the other side of being bad or evil or promoting evil. This is, again, the closer we get to 1, the more likely you are to have physical violence. This is why I'm so glad that the senator wants to talk about this, right? Because the closer we get to us and them and good and evil and promoting bad, the more likely we are, this is according to research, that we are going to have physical violence. And just for your own context and information, this has been studied for years, right? So it is not one person's view, certainly not just my view, but I do love the research part. But this has been for years, and that's why I mentioned Desmond Tutu and Donna Hicks in the beginning, because they had over 20 years of experience in this. So now I'm going to get to number 1. And number 1 escalates to violent words that lead to violent action. And I think that's a really important thing to remember, that violent words lead to violent action. It's when those feelings that build up in you starts to feel like, I cannot believe this. This is too much. It's they're not human kind of language. It's a justification for violence that can occur. And it's approving of violence. We want those things to happen. And so that is just one of the aspects of the Dignity Index. I will tell you, it's a phenomenal resource to go to. Free. I cannot say it enough. The resources on the index cost you nothing. They're absolutely free. So if you want to dive into them a bit more, if you want to know when did that turn happen that things became violent, it's a great thing to look at the words that we are saying and that are already there. And with this, I'm going to back up a little and really just ask you, Senator, the work that you do, I've been drawn to because of your commitment with dignity. And I notice, again, looking at the work that you do around food insecurity right now and the work that you do to elevate others and to talk at a 7, right? Like, how much can you talk at a 7? How much can you talk at an 8? I'm so impacted by that, and I'm wondering if you ever think to yourself, like, yes, that what we're doing in food security and addressing food insecurity, that is because I care about the dignity of others, right? Like, there's so much that happens from your office, and so I'm just wondering if those are direct thoughts that you have as you talk about dignity so much, because I've been following you and been amazed by it. Can you hear me? So just in case I can't be heard, I'm going to dive a little bit more into the things that I see around the work of the Senator's office and dignity. And I'll tell you a little bit about myself as well. I'm coming from Penn State University. We are apolitical. So I am not saying these things from a political point of view. Rather, from a research perspective, the work done here truly reflects dignity, and it seems so deliberate.
I want to really thank you for recognizing the work that we're doing. I really want to thank you. We have been trying to lift up dignity. I wouldn't say I'm a 7 all the time, but sometimes I may reach that level. But we know everybody's got worth. Everybody's got inherent value, and we try to do it not just in the policy, but actually in our constituent services and in our everyday operations. So thank you so much for listening, for recognizing us. And we got quite a few callers. I think we should get to the callers. It looks like we got a number of people who submit questions in advance as well. So would it be okay we can move the callers? Karen, are you ready for that?
I'm absolutely ready for that. And I can share more information, whatever's needed.
Okay, so let's get some callers because I really appreciate the framework and so many examples you gave. And so hopefully folks can think about where they are on the scale in their day-to-day conduct. But, let's see what our neighbors are thinking about. Tara, let's get some calls.
All right, quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please just press *3 on your phone at any moment. Thank you. Senator, we have a call from a submitted question, from Brian from Mount Airy. Brian asked, my neighbor always parks in a way that blocks part of my driveway. I've tried to let it go, but it's gotten really frustrating, especially when their guests come late at night. How do I speak without blowing up?
That's a really great question. One, it's okay to acknowledge that your frustration is legitimate. Okay, so showing dignity doesn't mean you're not frustrated, that you don't get upset. It is okay to get upset. It is okay to be frustrated. It's what to do with that. And it is also okay. So I would, number one, use this scale. When you are thinking about how to address this with your neighbor, make sure you're not moving into an us and them, that you don't move into mocking tones, that you don't move into a way that is meant to demean the other person. Sometimes we do have to take action, right? Sometimes that might mean, I've lived in apartments before where when you park in a neighbor's spot, your car got towed. Nobody's ever happy about that, so I'm not suggesting that. I'm just naming some of my own experiences. But I will say, when talking to your neighbor, for your own sake, making sure you're not mocking, demeaning, or belittling, right? Because the closer we get to that kind of language, the more likely you are to have violence. That is different than saying, listen, I could have a family emergency and need to leave my house. You cannot block my driveway. It's not safe for us, right? That is very different than, you're just inconsiderate and I don't like you and you never do anything right. You're a terrible neighbor. Those are two different ways to say that, right? So needing your driveway available is a reasonable thing. How you address it is what you need to do with dignity. And so just watch for your language.
Good. Keep it going, Terry.
All righty. We had a question from Nia from Worcester. Nia asked, I found myself arguing online about politics a lot. People say some truly nasty things. How can I defend my views and values without lowering myself to the same tone?
Mm-hmm. That's a really great question, and that is a pertinent one that is happening right now, one that I hear every single day. I'm going to, again, lean into the index. And number one, if you find that you're talking to somebody and they're at a level four, so remember, at a level four, we're mocking and we're attacking the other side, their belief, their commitment, their competence, and their performance, ask yourself, do I need to engage with this person? Is it healthy for you to engage with somebody who's mocking you? I didn't share this before, but I am also a clinically trained mental health counselor. And I can say this, that when you engage with somebody that is mocking you, especially when it is a choice of yours, that is going to diminish how you feel and your own self-worth. Do you really need to engage with this person? Don't you deserve something better? And is that the healthiest way for you to spend your time? That being said, it is a great thing to defend your beliefs, your standards, what you hold dear and true. You can do that, but when you find people are at a four and are mocking you or attacking you, think about, is this a healthy thing for me? Is this how I, as a worthy human being, need to spend my time for myself, or is this demeaning and not healthy for me? If you find it's not healthy, it is okay to say, I'm not engaging with this person.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
All righty. A quick reminder, if you'd like to join in on the conversation or ask a question, please press *3 on your phone at any time. We had another submitted question by Jerry. From Edmonton, Jerry asked, why should I speak with dignity to people who show me none, especially when I feel like my dignity is constantly under attack by political leaders?
That is an excellent, excellent question, and also a question I hear all the time. And number one, I'm going to go back to choice, right? You don't necessarily need to engage with people who do not represent your beliefs. So number one, that might be a great time to get more involved in the senator's office, who you feel like dignity matters. He treats me with dignity. Instead of spending time with those who don't, choosing to spend time with those who affirm your dignity, who will advocate for your worth, for your value, will reduce down some of that hostility that we see when we look at the scale coming in at a 6, at a 5, right? When we see it getting worse, we know those numbers are counting down. Sometimes we tend to spend time with people who are hurting us. And it's a great time to ask yourself why. Now, there are some roles where people are expected to spend time with people who may be hurtful to them. I would say politicians are one of them, and so I really respect what you do, Senator, because it can be very difficult. But if you are not in a role where that is part of your responsibility, then you might want to make a flip and change things. Instead of spending time with those who mock and demean and harm you, spend time in offices and speaking with those in Senator Haywood's office or other offices where dignity is pertinent and prominent and essential, because that's where you're going to feel affirmed. And also, it advocates for change. So the more we spend time mocking one another, the less likely you are to have change, the more likely you are to have violence. If you're spending time in that dignity space and advocating in that space and getting involved, you are going to find not only your own anger decreases, but also you are actually taking steps to bring about that thing you want, which is more dignity.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. So we have a caller, Stan. Stan, you are live.
Okay. How's everybody doing today?
Good.
Hi, Stan.
All right,
it's interesting. How you doing, partner?
Good.
All righty. You caught me at a time I was just relaxing. So, you know, but I'm always willing to talk about certain things that bother me where I'm at. I'm in East Mount Airy. I'm not going to mention where my address is, but the first thing I want to talk about is corner parking, okay, where the residents, you know, at night or in the morning have a tendency to park their cars right at the corner of the street you're coming out of, either on the right side or left side. And you have cars that are cutting across you at this point, and you can't see those cars until the last moment. And if those people don't see you, you know, you have an accident. Okay, you get hit. And it's a senseless accident where everyone should join in. If you're in East Mount Airy, West Oak Lane, wherever, call 911, report the corner car parking, because that's going to save you the aggravation of going through an accident, right, with your insurance company or the person that hits you that may not have insurance, okay? And then you have to figure out with your insurance company, you got to go through all the rigmarole to either get your car repaired or if the car is totaled. Then you got to work things out. It may take a month or two to get that done. It's just aggravation for senseless things that shouldn't happen. There shouldn't be any corner parking. They should be marked with maybe yellow lines or something. All right?
Yeah.
If you park in that yellow line, you
should. Yeah, I agree with you. Let me get Ken Armstrong to respond to what you're saying, please.
Absolutely. So, number one, I love the way you brought forward your concern, right? It wasn't with let me treat others badly and how terrible they are at driving and people are just horrendous. What you just suggested, calling 911 if you see somebody who's not parking legally and getting involved, is exactly what you should do. There are ways to change parking spots. It's how we do a thing, right? So there are petitions that can happen, getting involved with your local political office, obviously with the senator, right? Those are some easy ways to do it. But more than the issue, you brought something forth with dignity. You brought something forth saying, here's a challenge, I'm really concerned, I don't like it, and this is one way to handle it, even when it's upsetting and frustrating. And so I want to say, bravo to you for that, because that is dangerous and also very frustrating. And how you handled it is a great demonstration of this is how we address dignity and this is what we can do in this space. So thank you for addressing it in that manner, and I do agree with you. There's lots you can do. Your local senator, calling 911, those are excellent suggestions when you see something that is unsafe. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks, Stan. Now, Karen, what number would you put Stan's response at between that audience numbers 4, 5, 6, 7? What number would you put Stan's response on?
I would put Stan's response, what a great question, at a 7. And I'll tell you why. Because he was fully engaged. He didn't like what the people were doing. He didn't agree with it at all. And he's willing to say, and here's some ways to break through that challenge, to do it that doesn't demean or frustrate him, because he deserves to be treated with dignity, or others. So I would actually rank that at a 7. And even though the disagreement isn't necessarily with your neighbor, you may not know who the person is that's parking there. How you addressed it with, let's call 911, let's call my local senator, let's do something about it that isn't demeaning, is why I would say that is a 7. And so that also demonstrates it's not that hard. It really isn't that hard to behave in such a way where you feel like your dignity is honored and you're honoring the dignity of others. It's just a matter of stopping and doing it and realizing I'm getting too far with this when you need to step away. And so, beautiful, beautiful.
That's great. Thank you, Sam. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I can say, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Karen.
I can say that just listening to your constituents and listening to people who are calling in and their concern, they really are rating very well in dignity and their presentation of dignity and how it matters to them. And so I just want to take a moment and acknowledge that, because that matters. That matters that mm-hmm. that's what they're demonstrating, even in their own frustration. So great job, everyone, because you can do it, and you are.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, quick reminder, if you want to join in on the conversation or ask a question, please just press *3 on your phone at any time to participate. All righty, we're going to go live with Danielle. Danielle, you're live.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Thanks so much.
Oh, hi. I was just like to go out. My question was, is dignity being offered to all U.S. senators and their constituents as well?
Oh, I love your question. I love your question. So, yes, it is available and offered. Think about it. Dignity is our inherent worth, right? It really is our inherent worth. And so Senator Haywood chose to elevate that with his constituents. In his work in his office, I can tell you, somebody who partners in his office, those who work in his offices, those he partners with, and all of his constituents, he's chosen to embed it. So really your question is this something that all politicians can do? Yes, 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 and yes. And we talked about free resources as well. So the information that's been shared with you all, it's free. It's not costing anything to look at the Dignity Index and go on to their resources. There are ways that politicians, and I'm going to use you, Senator Haywood, as an example, can embed this in their work, in their offices, in their communities. This is something tangible. And when we do, we reduce violence. I'm going to go back to that example of food insecurity that the senator is saying we've got to address this issue. That is part of dignity. Safety is part of dignity. When you don't have enough food and your family doesn't have enough food and you don't know where it's going to come from, you don't feel safe. And so it is possible for everybody to embed this and to work with the Dignity Index. Those are phenomenal folks that are working in the index. And one is Tammy Pfeiffer, who actually received the Woman of the Year award from Time Magazine. And the members of the Kennedy family are also involved in making sure dignity is in the forefront. Right. And so I just want you to know, yes, it is tangible and possible to dive into this for every politician. I really respect and honor the way the senator does this in his office. It makes a huge difference. And then the only other thing I will say is there's a difference between dignity and respect. And he understands that, too. Some of these challenges that people are calling in about may feel like, how do I respect the person who is parking in my driveway and I've told them not to? How do I respect them? I keep saying no. Or how do I respect that colleague who is deliberately doing the wrong thing again and again and just combative with me? I don't mean accidentally. I mean, you know, you've got this contentious relationship and you know it. And it seems like they're harmful to you. There's a difference between that and respect. Treating you with dignity as a person with unearned worth. That means it doesn't matter if you do good or bad. It doesn't matter if you're a perfect colleague, a perfect spouse, a perfect daughter, son, parent, citizen, non-citizen. Doesn't matter. You have value because you are, period. The other is respect, and respect is earned. And so when I started off saying, I really love the work that is happening in the senator's office, I respect him. He has earned my respect. And I need to treat him with dignity, whatever he is doing. So those are two different things. And so when we move out of that frame of having to respect everyone and instead having to show everyone dignity, we're going to reduce the violence. Some people don't earn that respect, but you still need to show them dignity and treat them with dignity.
That was a tremendous contrast between respect and dignity that is often confused. That was a tremendous contrast. It really helped me as well. And I will say that the question about U.S. senators is that it's something that can be done. Now, whether people choose to do it is what we're trying to address and trying to get more people to choose, elected officials to choose to treat everyone with dignity, to recognize the dignity of the inherent worth of everyone. It is a challenge. Yes, caller, it is a challenge. Danielle, it is a challenge. But that is one of the main reasons that we are celebrating Dignity Month in order to create some more clarity, not just amongst neighbors, but other people who may follow, that we need to move much closer to recognizing that everybody has equal worth, inherent worth. So that's one reason we're doing these calls. But thanks so much, Danielle. Let's keep it, Karen, let's keep it going. Who's next?
Our next caller is Lois.
Hi, this is Lois Scott, and I am a senior. I live in a neighborhood where the person across the street from me has a very large tree. And of course, you know, the leaves are falling, you know, that's to be expected. But how do I handle the situation? Because every time the person gets their lawn cut or whatever, they rake the leaves up in a pile. They don't pick them up. So what happens when the wind blows again and it rains, they're all over the street and on my lawn and everybody else's. How do you handle that kind of frustration? And why is you not picking them up?
And there could be lots of reasons why she doesn't pick them up. So I can't really speak to that piece. I can speak to how you handle that. Right. And from a few different points of view, I would say just make sure, number one, that you are treating her with dignity when you explain that wet leaves can also be unsafe. They're easy to slip, especially for a senior, especially for a person with a disability. Somebody like me who has arthritis, it is easy to slip on wet leaves. And so that could also be a safety issue. But there are times, and this gets, again, into respect versus dignity. If people feel that you come to them and you're not being respectful, they can choose to be oppositional, right? The key is to remove the opposition to get the outcome you are seeking, which is a safer walking environment. We might not like leaves everywhere, but they can be slippery. And so for you to consider, how are you going to her, right? If you're going to her angry and frustrated, I say take a breath, take a moment, breathe, wait till you are feeling like I can have this conversation now, and I am going to do it in a way that demonstrates I am at a 7. I can say, this is unsafe, and I really need you to pick this up. What do we do to address this issue? Help me understand what we could do to make this easier. It could be something as simple as she didn't know that there were bags for leaves or where to get them, or it could be something bigger. But for you to be able to address it in a way where you are modeling dignity, that's the beauty of it. Dignity spreads. right? And so even that question about senators, dignity spreads, just like volatility spreads, dignity spreads. And so when you're demonstrating that to her, you are going to be spreading it. You are going to be sharing that, and that's going to help you have the community that you want and remove the frustration that you have. But I would say really think about what is your mindset before you talk to her so that you don't wind up with opposition that you really weren't intending to have.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Karen, I see a previously submitted question number 8, Teresa from Cheltenham. You see that one?
Yes.
Okay, let's try that one.
Okay, Teresa asks, when someone says something racist or ignorant at a community meeting, how do I call it out without escalating the situation?
So I would say it depends on Teresa's role, first of all. If I were at a community meeting and the senator were there, I would know to lean into him. And I'll tell you why. Because on a regular basis, he is at a 7. On a regular basis, he is fully engaged with the other side, understanding that there's going to be insult, harm, and disagreement. He's also not complicit, right? And that's where frustration comes in, when you're sitting with others and they are complicit. They're like, this is okay. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And they're not thinking about all those people that were just hurt by that slur. They're thinking about it in one direction only. And so if you don't need to be the one leading, I would lean into somebody who on a regular basis is used to this and demonstrates a 7 routinely, which I have to say is not easy, okay? But if you are in the leadership role, there's a few things I would recommend you do. Take your time and go through the book. You should probably be able to find it in your local library, Leading with Dignity by Donna Hicks. And it talks about ways to handle these challenges. And I'm saying this for those who are in leadership roles and find themselves on a regular basis in these circumstances. I can tell you as a person who works in DEI, I have been told, I have had people say, I've had others accused of, more slurs than you can imagine. And number one, so for those you don't know me, can't see me, we're on the phone, I'm an African-American woman. I have a disability, and I have a child with a disability. And I know for myself that I need to be in a good headspace going into community meetings because I don't know what everybody is going to say. We establish ground rules in the beginning, meaning this is how we're going to engage. When you have the microphone, this is what you speak. They've got these sheets that really lay out the dignity index so that we're treating one another with dignity. So somebody comes in and they say a slur. They're not in agreement with this, but I know my worth and I know the worth of the others in the room. And it is okay to hold somebody accountable. If you remember when I talked about the dignity model and said accountability is one of them, it is okay. That was derogatory. That was not professional in this space. That's not what we're doing. That's not what we're doing. We're not here to harm each other. If you want to have a different conversation with me outside of this space, that's okay. But that is not what we do to one another. And it is okay to call it out, not in a combative way, because we don't want violence towards you. But it is okay to say, that's not acceptable. And I have to tell you, typically when people say slurs to me, whether it's about me or others, I will often invite that person out to coffee. So, great, if that's your thinking, let's take this in a different space. Why don't you come to coffee with me and let's have a conversation? And we have a full conversation about what they've said and the challenges with that, but I remove it from the community space because I don't want, number one, those other people hurt, or volatility. That being said, if it's not your responsibility, don't necessarily take that on because you have to care for your own well-being also. that is justified, that is fair, that is rational, and you deserve dignity as well.
Thanks so much. Wow. We can get a few more callers in. Looks like we got about 12 more minutes, so let's see what we can do, Karen, either callers or people who have submitted questions in advance.
All right, we're going to go live with Rhonda. Rhonda, you are live.
Good evening, Senator Hayward. First of all, I want to say thank you for all that you do. And I also wanted to say my question is in reference to the peace officers and if they're taking advantage of the program. And it's not about beating up on police officers because I appreciate what they do, but I just want to know if they take advantage of it to communicate better with, you know, the people they come in contact with.
So I can tell you from police officers in general that there are various, whether it's police officers, peace officers, anybody in uniform that has some kind of authority, that we in Pennsylvania are having conversations on how do we train people in the dignity model. They've done it in Boston to change some of the policing that's happening in various precincts in Boston, and the change has been phenomenal. And so I'm like, you can do it in Boston, we can do it in other places. And so there are communities that actually have their officers trained in the dignity model. Regardless of what's happened, you have a standard to uphold, and safety is first, right? And so that doesn't mean harming or abusing people. That's everyone's safety, including the person that is also being arrested, whether they are accused or not, or if it's a peace officer in the community, if it's a community officer, right? They have an obligation. Do not be the judge and the jury and the decider of the outcome, because we are innocent until proven guilty. And so as we do the dignity model in these other spaces, the outcome has been really phenomenal, even for the officers who have said we have better relationships now, that we are applying dignity when we are working with community members and individuals, whether they are arrested or just a question of directions. They've also done the same thing just outside of Denver. And so there are communities that apply this model to policing. And so I can tell you it's something that I've personally seen work and work beautifully and create a safer outcome. So it's a matter, like the senator was saying earlier, it's a matter of choice.
Wow, great question.
Okay, Curtis from Abington asks, what does it actually mean to speak with dignity? Is it just about being nice, or is there more to it?
Not being nice. Thank you for that question. I appreciate it. It is not about being nice. It is about treating somebody as if they have inherent worth because they do. So if I get into a fight with the senator and I decide I don't like what he's saying and so I'm going to call him names and demean him and mock him, I'm not treating him as a worthy person. Might we disagree on something? Absolutely. But I don't need to demean him, and that's what this is about. And that's why that respect versus dignity is so important. The senator doesn't have to respect me. We can have totally different views, and he could say, that Karen, I'm not respecting her. But he still needs to treat me as a person with a life that matters, even if he doesn't respect me. And so it is not about being nice. It is about valuing that inherent worth in a person. I hope that helps. That respect versus dignity is a big part of this is not about being nice.
Huge.
Yeah.
Andre from Glendale asked, sometimes I feel disrespected in work meetings. People talk over me or ignore my ideas. How do I advocate for myself without sounding too aggressive?
Great question. So I would say, what does aggressive mean? And for you to look at, am I being stereotyped? What is really aggressive? Again, I'm going to say this as a Black woman who is often advocating for people all the time. And so for you to know for yourself, what does aggressive really mean so that you're not being stereotyped? And to be able to firmly assert what you are saying, hey, this is what I value. You're hearing me do that right now through this whole conversation. You've heard the senator do it. And really, it's asserting what you believe and knowing that doesn't mean we're arguing, doesn't mean we're, you know, again, we're not mocking, we're not calling people names. We're saying this is what we believe in, and this is why, and this is how we're going to bring it forward. And that really is asserting yourself and doing it in a way that affirms you, that values you. If you feel yourself getting upset when you're doing it, take a breath so that you find your tone, your actions don't become something that makes you question, am I doing this right?
Wow, tremendous advice. Let's take a few more questions live or from the list. Please submit it.
Okay. There's another submitted question by Devontae. Devontae asks, is there a way to check someone's behavior, like calling them out for being disrespectful and still model dignity in how I do it?
Sure. I mean, there will be situations where you truly don't respect someone. If I just started yelling at the senator right now, I don't think you'd respect me because I wouldn't have earned it, right? And so there is a way to treat somebody as if they have value without respecting them. That's not yelling. That's not screaming. That's not name-calling. That's not mocking. That's not harassing. So when we do those things, take a look at the index whenever you can. When you start to see yourself getting at a 5 and a 4, and you're doing those behaviors, mocking, making fun of, yelling at, deliberately insulting, you know you've crossed the line from, I just don't respect you, I'm trying to hurt your character. I'm trying to hurt your inherent worth and value. And that's how you gauge that, is staying away from that kind of behavior where you hurt a person's inherent worth and a person's character and just like, we don't agree the same. Your policy, your politics, your way of thinking doesn't resonate with me. I can't respect it, but I'm going to treat you like a valuable person. I'm not going to mock you or deliberately harm you. That doesn't mean you'll also engage with that person either. It's okay to step away.
I just want to add a few things here, just in terms of some context. Gun violence. Mm-hmm. Neighbor-to-neighbor gun violence, which fortunately is going dramatically down in Philadelphia and I think across the nation as well. But we have found that some of these arguments that end up in people shooting each other over a range of things that are not often life-threatening, I think it comes from people not seeing the real value, the human value of their counterpart, of their neighbor. What have you seen, Karen, in terms of the impact of recognizing dignity and its connection to gun violence? Any work, any studies on that?
There are starting to be studies on that. Not a lot of studies around dignity and gun violence. I would say dignity and violence, so not a study specifically around gun violence, mm-hmm. but you are correct, right? When there is violence, you're able to dehumanize a person, and that's the key. I would say whether it's guns or anything else, once you dehumanize a person, you probably heard it, you know, that person is worthless. Their life is worthless. Words like that. So I've dehumanized you. You're nothing. You know, you call people animals. You do things like that. That escalates it, right? And so, again, watching your words, because if we can move away from dehumanizing a person, it gets harder to say, I'm going to just take this gun and hurt you because you've hurt me, right? It needs to move beyond that, but we first need to care for the value of a person. But that is an area that we should study. So thank you, Senator, because I think that's mm-hmm. a deeply valuable area that warrants greater study.
Yeah, we found in some conversations with folks who were shooters that how they felt about the person they were shooting was pretty bad. Yeah, pretty tough. Now we're down to our last 2 minutes. And Karen, I would like to give you, Aretha, a chance to do any kind of closing or summary that you think might help people who were on the call or people who submitted questions in advance, as we are on a common journey toward treating each other with more dignity. This town hall is just one stop on that route. But anything you would like to share, I did want to make sure you had a chance to have some closing comments if you do have some.
Absolutely. So number one, thank you for having me. And I want every single solitary person who's on here to know that you deserve dignity. I would take the resources of the Dignity Index. Again, it is free. You can get the book Leading with Dignity at the library, and there is a global dignity organization, which is called Global Dignity, that also has free resources. Take the information and think about it for yourself. Have there been times that you weren't treated with dignity? Maybe there were times you didn't even realize that you weren't treating yourself with dignity. You weren't treating yourself as valuable as you are. I believe it starts with that. When you start to honor your own dignity, it is much easier to honor somebody else's. If you're having a hard time honoring somebody else's dignity, look at your own and see where are you falling short in your life for yourself. Because it is difficult if you feel like you're not worthy to see somebody else is worthy too. And so that is always the starting point that I begin with. You deserve this. Look into this for yourself, because you do deserve dignity. You absolutely do. And I want to thank you, Senator, for the work that you do in this space. I have to tell everybody out there, you lead. You absolutely lead. And so if you've got others who are interested, your colleagues, your comrades, anybody in this space, Senator, that you feel, I just let them know you are an example and you lead in this space, and it matters.
Thank you so much. No, thank you. Thank you so much. So, hey, everybody, this has been a great discussion. Again, Karen, I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening and sharing your wisdom. I want to thank everyone who's been participating on our telephone town hall discussion, those who listened in and those who asked questions and gave us suggestions. If you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. Special thanks to Brian, Mia, Jerry, Stan, Danielle, Louise, Teresa, Rhonda, Curtis, Devontae, and Andre, and certainly all those who listened in. Thank you all for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 215-242-8171, or you can visit my website at senatorhayward.com. Thank you again, and good night.